reading and writing and radio.
"Let's consider your age to begin with," the White Queen said with great decision. "How old are you?" "I'm 7 1/2 exactly." "You needn't say exactly," the Queen remarked. "I can believe it without that. Now I'll give you something to believe. I'm just 101, 5 months and a day." "I can't believe that," said Alice. "Can't you?" the White Queen said in a pitying tone. "Try again. Draw a long breath and shut your eyes." Alice laughed. "There's no use trying," she said. "One can't believe impossible things." "I dare say you haven't had much practice," said the Queen. "When I was your age, I always did it for 1/2 hour a day. Why, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast."
The author of that passage about belief and disbelief was Lewis Carroll, but it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
"I can't believe that," said Alice. And she certainly found plenty in both Wonderland and Looking Glass Land that she found hard to believe. That didn't bother the creatures that lived in those places, though. They went on blithely believing and assuring Alice that she could believe, too, if she'd only practice. When Elspeth, my youngest daughter, was 3 or 4 years old, she'd meet every statement that we made, whether from her older sisters or from a parent, and whether it was believable or not, with, "I can't believe that." And with Alice and Elspeth, it's the child that's not believing the older person. But usually it's the other way around. It's the grown-up who doesn't believe the child. There's a story book, you've probably seen it, it's one of these easy-to-read books, and it's called Nobody Listens to Andrew. And he discovers that there's a bear in his bed. And he tries to tell everybody, his parents and his older brothers and sisters and neighbors and so forth, and everybody is preoccupied, and they don't pay any attention to him. You all know about that, when you're trying to tell somebody something and they simply aren't listening. Well, Andrew, however, finally does stand still and yell that there is a bear in his bed, and then everybody is all electrified, and they all race around, and they do something about it, and sure enough, there is a bear in the bed. Well, I find this story a little hard to believe. It's such a preposterous story, of course, but what I find hard to believe is that the older people, the minute they hear Andrew say that there's a bear in his bed and finally hear it, that they immediately believe him. They should have disbelieved a little bit and been convinced before they rushed off to do something about the bear in the bed. A truer story, I think, to the way things are, is a delightful book by the Wisconsin author Florence Perry Heidi called The Shrinking of Treehorn. Treehorn is a little boy who discovers that he is shrinking a bit each day instead of getting bigger. And he tries to tell his mother and his father, and they not only don't listen to him, but they don't even notice that he is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the days go by, and he has to sit on higher things in order to get to his meal, and they say, "Eat your breakfast, dear," and things like that. This preoccupation of the grown-ups and not noticing a child. Finally, Treehorn solves his own problem. He discovers what it is that's making him shrink, and he does something about it, and the story ends without the parents ever having noticed that Treehorn shrank and grew big again. You'll like the pictures by Edward Gorey in that book, too. Another book that you'll enjoy is called Ninoc Rise by Natalie Babbitt. The hero in this book goes to the top of Ninoc Rise, and he finds out what the terrible megrimum is, which everybody is scared to death of, but no one has ever seen. He reports back to the grown-ups what the megrimum is and that it is nothing to be afraid of, and discovers that nobody pays him any attention. The point of that book, I think, is that nobody really wants to believe him. They all want to believe in the terrible megrimum they've geared their lives to being scared of the terrible Megrimum, and so no matter what our hero says, they're going to go right on believing in this strange and awful creature. Another story about disbelief is a movie that I never saw. I was scared to go. It was when I was a kid, and the story was about a kid who is out on a fire escape, and he sees a murder through a window in a New York apartment, and when he goes back and tries to tell the grown-ups that he has seen a murder, they think that he's making it up. And the movie goes on, the murderer discovers that the boy has seen, and the murderer believes that the boy knows and is out to get the boy. And it's a rather scary show, as I recall hearing about it, as the boy tries to get the grown-ups to believe both that he has witnessed a murder and that his own life is in danger. A story that I'm sure you've all heard is that most famous story of disbelief from 600 B.C., I think it is, and Aesop, who told it, probably first heard it from his grandma, who heard it from her grandma, who heard it from her grandma. Who knows how old the story of the boy who cried wolf is. And you know how that goes. He's a shepherd out in the field, and you're supposed to cry wolf when you see the wolf, and everybody will come and help you. And so, for fun, out in the fields, why, he cries, wolf, wolf! And, of course, everybody rushes to help him, and then he laughs and says, it's all a joke, there isn't any wolf. And he does this a couple of times, and then one day the wolf comes. And so the boy shrieks out, wolf, wolf, wolf! And meanwhile, the adults all say, oh, he's just kidding. And so the wolf eats up the sheep, and for all I know, like Little Red Riding Hood, he may eat up the boy, too. It makes delicious reading or listening in a story to have someone, usually a child, disbelieved by an adult or by somebody in authority, and then for those grown-ups, those big people, to find out that he or she was right all the time. And the grown-ups, to use an old-fashioned word that my grandmother used to use, are sneeped. They feel chagrined. And at that point, it's usually very hard for the hero not to say, I told you so. This is true in Amahl and the Night Visitors. This is an opera for children by Giancarlo Menotti, and you've probably all seen it and heard it on TV, for it's put on every year at Christmas time. Now, an opera, as you know, is a story that's told in song and music, and Amahl is a boy who is no older than many of you that are listening. His part is sung by a young boy. He's crippled, and he lives in a hut near Bethlehem with his widowed mother. Apparently, he's used to telling tall tales and not being believed. When the opera opens, he's being called into bed, and he says, oh, mother, you should go out and see. There's never been such a sky. And he describes the way the sky is, and he finishes up and saying, and hanging over our moon is a star as large as a window. It has a tail, and it moves across the sky like a chariot on fire. And the mother exclaims, oh, Amahl, when will you stop telling lies? And she goes on to say that we don't have a stick of wood in the house, and there's not a drop of oil in the jug, and we haven't anything to eat, and all you do is worry your mother with fairy tales. Oh, Amahl, have you forgotten your promise that you weren't ever going to lie to your mother again? And he protests. He says, mother, mother, I'm not lying. Please do believe me. Please do believe me. Come see for yourself. And his mother says, why should I? And she lists his stories, all the whoppers that he's told before. And she finishes up, and now it's a star as big as a window. Or did you say a carriage? And Amahl says, but there is one. Cross my heart and hope to die. And at that point, we hear three knocks on the door. Now, we know that it's the three kings on their way to Bethlehem, but Amahl doesn't, and his mother doesn't, and she says, Amahl, go see who's knocking at the door. And I'm going to play what happens here, but I want you to notice the music as well as the words, because every time Amahl goes to the door, there's a little passage that shows his sort of limping on his crutch, and then there's a pause while he peeks through the door, and then you hear him returning. Now, when his mother finally goes to the door, why, you'll notice that it's the same music, but it's played with a much heavier step to show the mother.
Amahl! Yes, mother? Go and see who's knocking at the door. Mother, 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 come with me. I want to be sure that you see what I see. What is the matter with you now? What is all this fuss about? Who is it then? Mother, outside the door, there is a king with a crown. What shall I do with this boy? What shall I do? What shall I do? If you don't learn to tell the truth, I'll have to spank you. Go back and see who it is and ask them what they want. Mother, come with me. I want to be sure that you see what I see. What is the matter with you now? What is all this fuss about? Mother, I didn't tell the truth before.
That's a good boy.
There is not a king outside.
I should say not.
There are two kings.
What shall I do with this boy? What shall I do? What shall I do? Hurry back and see who it is, and don't you dare make up tales.
Mother, 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 come with me. If I tell you the truth, I know you won't believe me.
Try it for a change.
But you won't believe me.
I'll believe you if you tell me the truth.
Sure enough, there are not two kings outside.
That is surprising.
The kings are three, and one of them is black.
Oh, what shall I do with this boy? If you were stronger, I'd like to whip you.
I knew it.
I'm going to the door myself, and then, young man, you'll have to reckon with me.
Did you hear Amal say, "I told you so," there at the end? And his mother's, "Psh!" Nobody likes to be proved wrong. Well, today let's write on belief and disbelief, on being listened to or not listened to, even noticed or not noticed, like Treehorn. We might not have a story as unbelievable as the three kings at our door or a bear in our bed. It may be as ordinary as the story a friend of mine told me. When she was little, she and her friends were roller skating down the block, and over the clatter of their skates, they weren't able to hear her father, who was shouting after them to come back. He chased them for a couple of blocks, and by the time he caught them, he was just furious and punished them and didn't believe it when they said, "But we didn't hear you, we didn't hear you." All kids, Becky finished, have a secret tally of parents' injustices that they keep all their lives, and that one's sure on my list. She also suggested a reverse topic for this program. Not just when were you telling the truth and nobody believed you, but what about the grand fib that you told once and everybody did believe you? She had one like that, too. She was at camp, a bigger girl, and she told the littler girls that she was the grand werewolf and that she would initiate them all into the werewolf pack. They all wanted to be initiated, and so they all ate ketchup and toothpaste mixed together and sneaked out of the cabin in the middle of the night to howl at the moon. This was the initiation, and then she told all these little kids that when they went back home, that they would change into werewolves at the next full moon. They would have to sneak out and howl, and then they would grow hair, and they would be transported to where all the werewolves did their midnight sports. And all those little kids seemed to believe her. If your brain's not already whirling and your pencil finger itching about the times that you weren't believed, here's a bunch of titles that are related to this whole topic. So choose one, choose any one. We could say, you wouldn't listen. You didn't understand. You didn't believe me. I never get a word in edgewise. Yes, that's what I said, but that's not what I meant. I can't believe that. Or, they really did believe me. Here at the end, I'd like to add in something about belief in general. I'm finding that the older I get, the more I believe. Maybe it's that I've had a lot of practice, like the White Queen. And I think the reason is this. Before, when I was little, I took things for granted. We all do. We get born into this world, and it's all around us, and we don't question things at first. But then you learned and I learned that we are all spinning around on a little ball in space, and I examined the cells of a leaf through a microscope, and I saw more and more of the marvelous complexities of things, and to me it's gotten more and more unbelievable that this world is here the way it is, and that time is marching along, and that space is swirling all around us, and that I'm here, and that I'm able to notice things, and to think about things, to talk on the radio to you. How incredible it is that there should be me, that there should be you. How incredible and unbelievable that there should be such a thing as life. You know, why should there be? It all seems so utterly improbable and impossible. There are 6 million impossible things to believe before breakfast. And if I can believe in life, I find that there isn't a thing I can't believe in. And so I find that I'm believing them all, even before I get around to brushing my teeth.
SSR has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.